Please welcome our main speaker, Julie.
I'm Julie, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, you guys, I'm so nervous. You know, my friend Matt, he like always asks me to speak here, I don't know, like once every year and a half or something, and I'm just like, oh God, please let me be good, please. But you know what, I love this meeting, because first of all, I love this little stand in front and get hugs from people. Okay, so I'm thinking, God, I hope I'm really good so a lot of people come and give me some hugs. I mean, that's just, you know, a really neat thing to have people hug you. I really like that. And the other thing is this little speaker man, host man, gives me a little bottle of water. He asked me if I wanted some mints. Okay, what does that mean? Okay. He wanted to give me some mints and some tissue to blow my nose. Isn't that sweet? You guys should keep him. Keep him. All right. Anyway, you guys, can I just tell you what I've done for the last 3 weekends, and then I'll tie it into being an alcoholic? Because I have an obsessive compulsive personality, and you're going to see how what I did these last 3 weekends. I just am really excited, okay? So just listen to me, and then I'll tie it in. Okay, so 3 weekends ago, I went backpacking in the snow, okay? Then 2 weekends ago, I went whitewater kayaking on the Kings River. And then last weekend, I went kayaking for 4 days. Well, I just got back Tuesday night on the Kern River. Okay, now, this is how it ties into being an alcoholic. First of all, I could not do any of those things while I was drinking. Okay, could you imagine trying to pack liquor in your backpack? Okay? I mean, I would have never imagined doing the stuff I do now when I was drinking. First of all, I had very, very severe hangover, so it just wouldn't have happened. You know what I'm saying? But the thing that has not gone away is compulsion, you know, obsessiveness. And I am obsessed with whitewater kayaking. I just want to do it all the time. So it really doesn't have anything to do with anything, but I'm just so excited about it. I just can't wait to go again. But, you know, I was just reading the book when I was up. It was a camp I was going to, and one of the people who was one of the instructors was the coach for the Olympic kayaking team. So I got pretty good instruction. I should be pretty good, don't you think? But I'm not. So I hope I'm a better speaker. But when I brought my book up there and I was reading my book, because I knew I had to, you know, speak at this thing, and I was getting a little nervous. And so I'm reading the doctor's opinion, you know, and I'm reading about the mental phenomenon of craving, or the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession. And I was thinking, oh my God, you know what? I've been sober over 12 years, and the phenomenon of craving has left me. And what a miracle that is. And how I forget that craving I had for alcohol, because it's been so long now since I've had a drink that craving has left me. But, you know, every time, you know, you start reading that book, then I start remembering, because I did a lot of my drinking down here in Long Beach, and, you know, I remember that craving for alcohol. I remember, you know, going into bars thinking I'm only going to have 2 drinks, and how your mind, and I know this was probably true for you too, you know, you sit there to have a drink, and all the things that are important to you change after a couple drinks. You know, maybe you're thinking about work or your family or whatever, money problems, and I have a couple drinks, and those aren't problems anymore. My problem is I got to think of a good story how I'm going to call in sick tomorrow, because I'm going to have a really bad hangover. I'm not going to be able to go. And I got fired from many, many jobs for doing that. But, you know, it's just amazing how the mind, you know, how liquor affects us. And, you know, I'm how old am I? I'm 39. I've been sober 12 years. I first tried to get sober when I was 24. I mean, I was an alcoholic I was an alcoholic from the beginning, and I'm probably one of the very few people in this room that's, I was just an alcoholic. You know, now everybody's drug addicts, but poor me, I just had to be an alcoholic, damn it. You know, my girlfriend's a heroin addict, I never got to do that. And when I met her, she was telling me how good it was. I was like, man, that sounds really good. But, you know, that never happened for me. But, you know, I really did start trying to get sober when I was 24. I stuffed feelings from the very beginning. You know, I've had a lot of time to think about this speech, you know. I hate that. I would rather him just tell me 10 minutes beforehand, okay, you're going to speak. You're like, okay. So, you know, I have these bits and pieces come to me, but I'll just try to be coherent. I was a stuffer of feelings from the very beginning. And I think I first stuffed them with food because I liked it a lot. And I was a chubby little kid, and I had, my mom's been married 5 times, you know, so I never, relationships weren't real stable in my household, and my mom's the type of person where if you have a feeling, you're going to regret, you know, saying what kind of feeling you had, unless it was a good feeling. You know, anything bad, it's like, don't feel that, you know, and why are you feeling like that? That's stupid. And so I learned at a really early age to stuff, you know, and I was really good at it. And I was an alcoholic from the very beginning. My mom's a practicing addict. She likes the pills. And my dad's a practicing alcoholic. And they're both still practicing, and they're functional. So, you know, they can do it. And unfortunately, I couldn't. My mom and dad, you know, my dad was not in the picture, just, you know, a couple weekends going over to his house. But I'd always drink when I went over there because since he's a practicing alcoholic, he always had beer. And, you know, I just started getting drunk right off the bat. I mean, drunk, really, you know, drunk. And I liked it, you know. I really liked it. I love the taste of liquor. I love beer. I was thinking about that because I knew I was speaking, and I was thinking, man, I haven't had beer in so long. Man, I really love the taste of beer. Man, I really like beer. And I really liked liquor, and I really liked what it did for me. You know, I didn't know about things like molestation and incest and all that stuff. I never knew about that until I came to AA. I thought I had a really fucked up childhood, you know, and really I didn't compared to a lot of people. And I'm like, oh God, feel sorry for me. And you know, I got here and I thought, oh my God, how did these people survive? You know, liquor was their comfort. That's how they survived. But, you know, I thought I was the worst. You know, I thought I had a bad, you know, growing up, get my mom having, you know, 5 husbands and numerous boyfriends, and I was kind of, you know, shoved aside for those men. It's probably why I'm gay. This is a gay meeting, right? No? Well, it isn't. Okay, well, you know, I could go either way. I am married now, so I will refrain from doing that. But anyway, you know, I grew up drinking, and, you know, God, I started getting in trouble really early. I remember I was 16, my first job, I was lifeguarding, and I was drinking beer in the lifeguard tower. Oh, got fired for that. I liked swimming. I was a swim person, and I was a swim coach. Oh, I talked about liquor too much on the deck. Oh, they fired me. You know, numerous jobs, they fired me. Oh, what? I was a water aerobics instructor. Oh, came to work drunk. They fired me. Yeah, I'm doing the aerobics all drunk. Happy hour, margaritas before aerobics, you know. I was not a good worker. It just wasn't for me. And What I saw growing up and what was pretty much instilled with me is, you know, my mom's married 5 times, she has all these numerous boyfriends, is that people come and go, it's the things that you get that count. Okay, so that's like, isn't that opposite of what regular people think? Isn't it people count, things come and go? Okay, well, I was raised the other way. And so when I was, 20, my 20s, I would go through people, you know, just collecting things. But, you know, I was already alcoholic, and I had that big, you know, hole in my gut that was empty. Now I would try to fix it with things people gave me or people, and nothing would work, you know, nothing would work. But I tried, and I kept trying, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I don't know how I made it through college, but I made it through college. And here, I got my degree in PE, okay? And, of course, the only thing you can do with PE is to go on and be a PE teacher. But I thought, I had worked Parks and Recreation my whole life, and I thought, I want to be a secretary. I just want... Don't I look like a secretary to you? I did. And I thought, I want to work 8 to 5, and I want to make a lot of money and have benefits, and I just want to be a secretary. I don't want to do that Parks and Rec, even though I have a PE degree. Well, guess what? I couldn't get hired anywhere. I had no skills. So I ended up working at United Parcel Service. Has anybody ever worked there? You gotta load boxes, okay? That was my job. I loaded boxes. Okay, well, as you already know, I'm not a good worker. And it was like manual labor. It was really hard. And the only way I survived in that job is because I had a lesbian boss. And God, it's not a gay meeting, though. But what can I say? She liked me. And so she wouldn't fire me, you know, even though I'm like, you know, oh, I'm tired. And I would always call in sick because I would get these. You know what? People that are so lucky that do not get hangovers. I was never one of those people. I mean, right off the bat, I had terrible, terrible hangovers. And at this time in my 20s, my hangovers were, you know, all the next day I would be, you know, just barfing. The whole next day I'd finally be able to hold something down about 8 the next night. And then the next day after that, you know, I would have the shakes. And, you know, I've thrown up blood before. I mean, you know, I had really severe hangovers, and that's one of the reasons why I got sober. I mean, my life was unmanageable since I was 5. But, I mean, you know, I was just going to keep on going. It's those damn hangovers that killed me. So I was working at United Parcel Service, and I was a big old drunk, and I was a really bad worker. And, God, it's been so long, you guys. It's hard to remember. Who wants to remember this stuff? I'm going to get sober so I can talk about the stuff I can remember. Anyway, I knew I was an alcoholic, and I really wanted to stop drinking. However, I just wanted to stop drinking for a while and then, like, drink like a normal person, because I was only 24. You know, but I, like I said, I'd been fired from numerous jobs. I couldn't hold a relationship. I had no spirituality, and I was pretty much bankrupt in everything. But I drank, and I liked to have fun. I didn't like to feel any bad feelings. No bad feelings for me. You know, if I was sad, I drank to be happy. And if I drank to be happier, you know. I'm a pretty happy person sober. Can you tell that for me? I'm pretty happy. All right. So anyway, I'm at United Parcel Service, and I go to this big party with my boss. She's there. And, oh, I'm so sick. And I cannot go to work the next day. And so I call in sick, of course, and, of course, she knew I wasn't really sick. And I knew that there was, I knew that UPS had a contracted out to treatment centers. Like, this is a long time ago. When did I first try to get sober? First got sober in, I mean, it was probably like 87. That's a long, I mean, I was 24 and now I'm 39. So, I mean, they were relatively new back then. It wasn't like the chic thing or anything, but, I mean, remember that? Those chic things where they make you drink and drink and, okay, it wasn't that. So it was this regular treatment center, and, but like I said, when I got there, I didn't think that I was going to stop drinking for good. I mean, gee whiz, I was only 24, you know? And at that time, that was young. You know, now people come in 15. It's like, gee whiz. But I was a young little girl. And we're in our first little circle meeting thing that those people have there. And so the counselor's saying to me, she's like, so what's it going to be like ever drinking again? And I'm like thinking, is she talking to me? I'm like, I'm 24. I'm going to drink again. I'm just drying out. This is like a drying out place, and now I'm going to learn to drink normally. And so she's like, well, no, you aren't, honey. You're a little alcoholic. And so I, you know what? It wasn't going to work for me because I knew I was going to drink again. I mean, I knew. I mean, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I wasn't ready to stop, you know, like, oh, no. And so, okay, for the people that aren't gay, here's a little for you. go on, appeal to everyone in the room. You know, inclusion. So you know what they say, you know, when you're first sober, you know, don't change where you live and don't do anything. Anyway, I had an affair with this guy in the hospital, okay? Married guy. He's like 39 and I'm 24, but I like him. He has a Corvette, okay? I like that. And you know, he had really nice lips, like a girl's lips. They're really soft. So, you know, right off the bat, you could tell I'm not staying sober, right? That's just not happening. So then they want me to go to one of those, what are those homes you go in after the treatment? Sober living. I'm like, that is not going to happen. People just need to let me out. I'm with Ken now. I'm bonded with Ken. He has lips like a girl, and we both want to drink again. So I think I made it the 38 days. 38 days, and Ken and I went out in his Corvette. I had a nice dress on. My hair was not like this. And I vomited in his Corvette. Oh, God. Anyway, Ken and I didn't last. Gigi was next. Anyway. God, you guys, I haven't thought of this in so long. It's kind of funny. Anyway. What happened is that the next 3 years, I continued to drink, but those were really the most miserable 3 years of my life. Because before I knew, I did know I was an alcoholic, but, you know, that I knew, but I didn't know what to do about it. After this treatment center, I knew I was an alcoholic, and I didn't want to do anything about it. So, you know, he was saying something about it, you know, your high lasts for 2 hours and an hour and then 50. Well, what does that have to do with what I was going to say? Okay, well, I don't know. anyway, okay, this is what I was going to say. You get miserable. You know, I knew I was supposed to stop drinking, but I couldn't stop drinking. And I was up here in Long Beach, you know, and I was playing rugby for the, I don't know, whatever the Long Beach team is. See, it's been so long. I'm aged. And I decided, you know what I need? I need a geographic. If I just move somewhere else. Have you guys ever done that? If I just move somewhere else, then I swear I will drink normally. I'll do it. I'll drink normally. And so I got an opportunity to move down to San Diego, and I took it. And I moved down to San Diego, and I started playing rugby with them. And, you know, has anybody played rugby? You know, if you play rugby, you're not going to stop drinking. Or, I mean, you got to have a good program not to drink playing rugby. And, you know, I didn't have a program. I just wanted to drink regularly, and I thought I could do it in San Diego. And, okay, for the straight people, got another story for you here. You know, I, maybe I'm not gay. Just kidding. Anyway, okay, so I got 3 years here before I get sober for good. And in these last 3 years, I ended up being a secretary, you guys. I did. I wore boys' clothes every day. And I sold tuna boat parts. I sold tuna boat parts. And I... Don't ask me how I got into it. I can't remember. But I was going to school to be a PE teacher. No, I was going to school to be a elementary teacher. And I was selling tuna boat parts. And so I was really miserable, you guys. I was just drinking. I was so miserable. And I was so miserable because I was having an affair with my 65-year-old man boss. And that was really bad. Bad. Why do those men, the older they get, they don't slow down? I don't get that. I think men should be with men. I do. I am an advocate of that because we don't go together right. Anyway, I'm telling you, okay, I hit my bottom with that man, all right? He did it to me. I've never been with a man since. I swear, 65, he did it to me. Just remember that. Ladies, you don't learn from my experience, ladies. My experience. But anyway, you know, I just hit an emotional, a physical, a mental bottom. I'll tell you my last drunk, and now I'm going to get sober. I was at a big tuna party, okay? It was a big tuna party, and it was another time I was wearing a dress, maybe like Bobby, had a little jewelry on, and I had bought, I was really poor, and I charged some high heels at Mervyn's, okay, and I was going to take them back, because, you know, when do I wear high heels? And I actually shaved my legs. I wasn't shaving my legs, I shaved my legs, and I went to this big tuna party, and at this tuna party, they had all the liquor you could drink, which is really good, because I was like poor, you know, and all the shrimp you could eat, and so I was poor, so I really like shrimp, that's like a delicacy, you know, so I'm eating all the shrimp I can, drinking all the expensive drinks I can. Meanwhile, this little 65-year-old man who's with his wife keeps on coming by telling me how beautiful I look, okay, that really cracks me up. So I'm just, I'm just pounding him down, and I'm sitting at this bar stool at the counter at the tuna party, and my high heels are stuck in the bar stool, and I kind of like tip over, okay? It was funny. It was funny, me in a dress. But it was a very ritzy tuna party, okay? And so, anyway, I'm weaving my way down the driveway from the tuna party because I'm all humiliated. And I never drank again. But it's so anticlimactic because you don't know how many bars in Long Beach I threw up. On myself, on other people, on the floor. I mean, I have done so many more humiliating things than just tip over on a bar stool. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, that was just the last straw. You know, because I had had so many demoralizing experiences before that. So maybe they finally all caught up and that was just the last one. My roommate at the time, she was getting sober. So maybe that was going on, you know, and then I was just like, I just can't do this anymore. Plus, I had to get rid of that old guy. God, I had to get rid of that. You know, you can only have sex with those people when you're drinking. Okay, maybe the boys can. Anyway, I really needed to get sober because, you know, I had no God. I'd never gone to church growing up. I never had any spirituality to begin with, so that was just, I never had it. Physically, you know, I was having those terrible, terrible hangovers. You know, I wasn't going to work for 2 days afterwards, which wasn't unusual for me, but, you know, I was just really getting physically sick from it. And mentally, you know, I was a mess. You know, I was a mess. I was this guy's prostitute. You know, I wasn't raised like that. I wasn't a good Catholic, but I wasn't raised to be some guy's prostitute. And, all these things happened, and I just hit a bottom with it. And so I started going to AA down in San Diego. And the first 30 days, I did not raise my hand. I didn't want anybody to think I was a newcomer. I mean, not like maybe I look like a newcomer. You know, I'm sure I look like a newcomer, but I'm like, oh, I'm sure I don't look like a newcomer. And I I would not stay after the meetings, you know, to meet people. I was just really scared. And it's like I really wanted sobriety, but I wasn't willing to go to any lengths. I was just kind of willing to go to the lengths I was willing to go to. But at least I stayed sober. So that's the good part. You know, I wouldn't recommend that. You know, I would recommend, you know, getting a sponsor right away and calling people and staying after meetings and getting a commitment and all that stuff that we're taught. However, that's not how it worked for me. But I would not recommend that for others. You know how they say don't get in a relationship, you know, for a year and stuff like that? Okay, well, that didn't work for me. But what happened is I met a gal that had 5 years sober, and I had about 6 months. And like I said, you know, all the things, I didn't like to really go to meetings. Yeah, at that time they were smoking meetings, you know, and I was a swimmer, and not like I put all that alcohol in my system, but I'm like, oh, how can I smell the cigarette smoke? Not like I went to all those bars, okay? I'm like, oh God, you know, I can't breathe. Oh God. That cigarette smoke, I just didn't want to go, and I met this gal, and she loved to go to meetings, loved to go to meetings. Well, I wanted to be with her, so what did I do? I love to go to meetings. Take me to those meetings. And so, you know, we became the little, you know, San Diego AA couple. There was tons of them, you know, and I'm sure there's little AA, Long Beach AA couples right in this room. You know who you are. And for the next, until I was 5 years, I had a pretty decent sobriety. We didn't have the best relationship. I didn't have any communication skills. I didn't have feeling skills. I didn't have any of those skills that people get. And so I had to learn those. It was very difficult for me. Obviously, I'm very verbal now, but then I wasn't so verbal. So anyway, we had a lot of problems. She had a couple kids that had, you know, severe disorders and stuff. And what had happened is we ended up splitting up, and I was like 5 years sober. And at 5 years sober, I had never felt such excruciating emotional pain as I felt over that breakup. Because, you know, I know people say, okay, well, you know, you don't feel your feelings in when you're drunk, and so you feel them more in sobriety. Or, you know, I didn't have anything to anesthetize me in sobriety. I'm just feeling my feelings. And, man, they sucked. I did not like it, you know. You know, I didn't want to drink, but I sure didn't want to feel those feelings. So what I did is I started having an affair. You know, that's going to make me feel better. I'm not so good at this part, okay? I'm good now. I'm really good now, but like for the last 5 years. But this part of my sobriety from about 5 to 7.5, I really I had a lot of problems. But it's like, you know, like when you're like having affairs or you're not feeling your feelings by like shopping or whatever you're doing not to feeling your feelings, when you're drinking, it's okay because you don't know any better. But then when you're in sobriety and you're doing that stuff not to feel your feelings, it's bad. Because I'm doing the same thing I was doing drinking, but I'm not drinking. So I don't even have anything to blame it on. And that was, you know, those were hard years for me, from 5 to 7.5. You know, I was still going to meetings. I was sponsoring people. I was being sponsored. But I didn't want to work on any of the feelings of that relationship, so I just didn't. I just, like, pretended like they weren't there. And, you know, I was just going through women and just being really shallow. And I was playing a lot of tennis. I was obsessed with tennis, so I was doing that for, like, 2.5 years. And it wasn't a good sobriety. It really wasn't a good sobriety, and I would not recommend that. But now here's where I get really good again, okay? And this is gonna finish me off right here. So So then I'm like, oh, I'm all, you know, having a bad sobriety, and I'm like, man, this is bad. But the thing about sobriety is it's all up to me. It's not like anybody else can do it for me. And that's what's good about it, and that's what's bad about it. Because so many times I want to say, you know, you just do it for me. Can't you just do it for me? You know, or you make it better for me. Why do I have to do the work? You do it for me. I used to do that drinking. Well, anyway, so I'm whining in sobriety. Well, it's up to me. It's an inside job. You know, it's all up to me. And so I'm like, man, I got to get out of this. This is terrible. And so then I meet little Loretti back there. And she had about 2 years sober. And she loved going to meetings. Love going to meetings. And does that sound familiar? Why do I get with those types? And at this point, I have like 7.5 years, and I'm sitting back on, yeah, I've been to those meetings. I've been around, you know, I'm all crusty and jaded kind of, yeah. If you had the kind of experiences I had, you need to go to meetings, too. You do need to go to meetings, you know? But anyway, I was like, I was in a rut, okay? Serious rut. So I meet her, and she's all excited about going to meetings, and so I start going to more meetings, and I start getting out of my rut, you know? It's like, it's really weird. We talk about this a lot. Ever since we got together, our lives have been, like, magical. Just really good stuff that has happened for us, huh? Ever since we got together. Come on, isn't that true? And so then I started getting these sponsees, these really good sponsees that really wanted to work the steps. And then so I'm going to meetings, I have a good relationship, and I'm working the steps with these sponsees. And these sponsees, they're, you know, some come and go, some call you a couple times, you never see from them again, or you work a couple steps, then they're gone. I had like three that once a week we would meet and do the steps and really, you know, committed. And what that did for me is it gave me such a rich, full spiritual life, because not only was I going to meetings, but then I was meeting with my sponsees one-on-one, and I don't know, it was just really magical. And then I had this great relationship, and I'm a PE teacher, and you know, I have the greatest job in the world. They pay me to have fun all day, you know. And we bought a house, we got married. We got married in an Episcopal church, just like this. With a little preacher man and you know, almost everybody there was AA, and I mean, just it, you know, things just started being really good, you know, just, I mean, how much better can you have it, you know? And so things were really, really good. And then about 11 years, so I'm a little over 12, 11 years, I work all the steps with all my sponsees, and then they kind of start, like, dropping off, like, okay, you're, like, too regimented for us, you know? Now that we've worked the steps, we kind of need a break from you. I can't imagine why. And so they kind of drop off one by one, and then, like, you know, I used to see them at meetings and stuff, and then I'm like, well, I don't really have to go to the meeting tonight because, you know, it's not like I'm going to see some sponsee there that needs me or something. I like to feel needed. And so, you know, I kind of stopped going to as many meetings, and one time Matt came over to my house at 6 o'clock. I already had my pajamas on, okay, and he's like, what is going on? He's like, want to speak at the meeting? I'm like, I don't think so. And, you know, that's what happens. The magic doesn't last. You go through, at least I do, I go through valleys and peaks in sobriety. You know, sometimes I'm having a good sobriety, sometimes not. Sometimes good, sometimes not. Well, then we went on vacation for like the summer for like 6 weeks, and neither one of us had any spirituality, and we were at each other's throats, you know. And when we came back this summer, we said, you know what, we've got to go back to meetings. I mean, that's the key. We've got to go back, and we did. We started going back to meetings again, and you know, right away, the quality of my life picks up. My, you know, I'm feeling good. I'm letting go, letting God, and, you know, things are just good, you know. And I really think that meetings are so important. You know, we're getting ready to go. So I'm a teacher, so I get the summers off. We're getting to go on this, you know, our next summer trip, and we're going to hit meetings. You know, all the years before, we hit meetings. Just last year, we were in a funk. But, you know, now things are good again. And, you know, my obsession with kayaking, it's got it. Oh, and that's the other thing. I started getting obsessed with kayaking, so I didn't want to go to meetings. I don't know how that correlates, because kayaking's on the weekends and meetings are at night. But, you know, I was too busy looking at my kayaking catalogs to, you know, to go to meetings. So, you know, here's kayaking season again. But I know what's important, because I know what I didn't do, and I know how it didn't work, and I know what works. You know, and I know that meetings and sponsoring and being sponsored, and it works. And that's hopefully that's my message, and not the other stuff. So I know it's little people are going to get their birthdays, so I don't want to take up any more of your time. Thank you very much for listening to me. If you want to give me a hug, I'll let you.